ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। You know, studying chapter 2 of the Vedanta Treatise book, which is World and Human Being. In this, we have completed the first topic, Mystery of the Origin, where he talks about everybody has assumed this concept called God, but nobody really knows what God is, and nobody really cares about it also. Now, then he gives this comparison with the mathematics, where you got to solve the unknown data. So you got to use the known data and arrive at the unknown data. Till you arrive at the unknown data, you assume it to be X. But X is not an answer. It is only an assumption. Similarly, you are giving a name called God. But people have accepted that name and nobody really probes into what the truth is all about, what that God is all about. So if you really are interested in knowing the truth, you've got to move from the known to the unknown. So, a lot of us are just talking all the unknown facts, unknown terms, not facts, unknown terms. And you read so many books or you listen to many lectures, everybody is addressing the divinity in unknown terms, like infinite mercy, infinite kindness, infinite compassion, etc. And you also think that you understood that concept and you don't really move towards it. You're intellectually very complacent, you know. So therefore he says, the way to gain true education is to move from the known to the unknown. So we got to move from the world to divinity, rather than going on talking only about unknown divinity. So therefore he says, Vedanta deals with this and he gives the poem, which is Blind Men and the Elephant. We have done up to this poetry, isn't it? I don't know who was there in the last class. Anu, were you there?
We've done poetry, sir.
Yeah, so we have done the poetry, I think. After that we have...
We've done it.
Yeah, so in the Blind Men and the Elephant poem, six blind fellows went to see what an elephant looks like. Elephant is a huge animal, and all of these people, they do not have the eyesight. They don't have the eyesight. Yet, they wanted to see what an elephant looks like. Similarly, God, elephant is compared with God here, or God is compared with elephant. Infinite. And to know that infinite, we do not have the equipment. Because our equipment, especially the intellect, everything is, whether it's body, mind, intellect, all these equipments are finite. So the finite equipment cannot comprehend the infinite reality. So we are like these blind people trying to discuss about the concept of God that we have grown up with, or we have listened from some people, and then we say our concept is the correct concept. Like the each blind fellow touched upon different parts of the elephant, and then they said elephant is like a fan, elephant is like a rope, elephant is like a wall, elephant is like a tree, etc. And they were arguing that their conclusion is the correct conclusion. And they say even the blindest can say, we are blind. And then they say even the blindest can say, you are so ignorant that you get into these kind of arguments. A person who really knows the truth never gets into any argument. And the solution to this is, we got to move from the known to the unknown and discover the truth ourselves, rather than getting into all these kind of arguments about divinity. It's not going to solve our problem. See, what is the big deal? Okay, even if your concept of God is correct, let us say, how is it going to help you? Unless and until You use that concept, put in the effort, and you realize the truth yourself. Otherwise, there is not going to be any transformation in your life. So elsewhere in the same book, he gives the example of a mule, you know. Mule carries gold on its back, but the mule doesn't know the worth of the gold. Or the laundry fellows use the mule to transport the dirty clothes to the river nearby, wash them, dry them, and transport them back. The clothes are all transported on the back of the mule, but the mule always remains naked. So we may be transacting with a lot of knowledge, but we do not know the worth of what we are carrying, and we remain completely in ignorance, completely in darkness. Therefore, he says, you've got to stop these arguments and then start moving towards the knowledge from the known to the unknown. So this much we have seen up to this poetry. So now let's read after that poetry. Vedanta gives no such names to God from that paragraph. Who would like to read? Shweta, you will read or somebody else?
Anu, Sandhya, why don't you all read, no? So everyone can read in turns.
Okay, I'll read.
Sandhya, Anu, whoever, I don't know who all are there. Avanti, Sadhana.
Guruji, you want me to read till composition of the word or?
No, you read. Vedanta gives no such names from there.
Yeah, till where, Guruji?
Till each paragraph. You read one paragraph, then I'll explain.
Okay.
Page 39, na Guruji?
41.
No, I'm having this iBook. So
41.
Okay.
Vedanta gives no such names to God as these blind men did to the elephant. Its approach to God is methodical. It systematically bridges the gulf between you and God. It provides you the philosophy to study, contemplate, assimilate, and apply it in your life for you to evolve spiritually and reach the ultimate state of self-realization, God-realization.
So what it's saying is, first of all, Vedanta doesn't put forth any such theories. Even if it puts forth some theory, it will be backed up with certain logic and reason, which you need to contemplate, assimilate, verify that in your life, and then only accept. Till then, you're not supposed to accept anything. Don't reject it also. Now you have to accept it also. So he says, it provides you with the philosophy to study, contemplate, assimilate, and apply it. And when you see the truth, once you apply, then you accept it. Otherwise, you say, no, this doesn't hold good. You can throw it. So he says, for you to evolve spiritually, you've got to follow this method. Not blindly follow or blindly reject. This is what is happening. I am following a particular set of philosophy in my life, which I've taken up from my parents or from my society. Now I reject all other philosophies. Why do I have to do that? So therefore, neither do you reject nor do you accept blindly. You understand it, put that into practice and see the veracity of what you have understood. Only if it stands the test of truth, the practical, in practical life, then you accept, otherwise you can throw it. So he says, thus you will be able to reach the ultimate state of self-realization, God realization. In other words, what he's trying to say is, till you have experienced it, you don't have to believe in it. You just put in efforts to get there. Till you get there, do not blindly accept anything. Continue. Continue, Anu.
Yes, the Supreme Godhead lies within you. It is your original nature. Your ignorance veils your Supreme Self. Vedanta gives you the knowledge to discover yourself. It is an exercise akin to medical treatment. When a disease seizes your body, you lose your original health. You consult a doctor. The doctor prescribes medicine to eradicate the disease. When the disease is removed, you regain your health. Health is your original state. The doctor cannot give you health. He can only remove ill health. So too, the self is your original being. Ignorance is the disease. The knowledge of Vedanta removes ignorance to restore yourself to yourself.
So, when he said, you know, Vedanta just gives you the philosophy to study, what is that philosophy? He's explaining that here. Vedanta says, that the Supreme God lies within you, and in fact, it is your original nature. Now, this is a statement given to us by the self-realized masters, right? Now, we don't have to blindly accept this. But these masters, they don't have any axe to grind. You understand? They are not expecting anything out of us. They are simply expressing the truth as revealed to them in their experience. So, and in their life also, they have demonstrated extreme unselfishness and selflessness. Having seen all that, and they are extremely happy, independent, having seen all that, we also get inspired and develop faith in that words of the masters and take that words and start understanding, questioning, progressing towards the ultimate truth. So he says, the philosophy of Vedanta says, you are infinite reality. You are that infinite reality, that is your original state. Your original state is infinite. Godhead. You are God. But when Vedanta says you are God, it is not saying that you, the individual Lakshmi Narayan, is God. Right? So very clearly, he is explaining, your ignorance is veiling your Supreme Self. You do not know about your true nature. You do not know about your true nature. You are ignorant about your true nature. He says Vedanta gives you the knowledge to discover yourself. See, first of all, what Vedanta does is, after having given the statement that you are God and it is your original nature, it asks you to question all your existing beliefs, including the belief that you are this body, you are this mind, you are this intellect, you are this sex, you are this, you are that color, sect, community, creed, etc., etc. So Vedanta gives you the knowledge to discover yourself. Now, discover is different from attaining the self. In short, this word discover is a very important word. Discover means you are already the self divinity. You just need to discover that. You just need to remove all the coverings, the conditionings that has been brought about due to your ignorance. So he says, discover the truth. It is an exercise akin to medical treatment, he says. Just like how health is your original state. You fall ill means you have moved away from your original state. When you take the medication, you have not attained health. You just removed the disease and you have reclaimed your original state, which is health. In Sanskrit, the word for that is swastha. So therefore, you are the self. You don't have to do anything. Through action, you cannot achieve it. You can only achieve it through knowledge. So therefore, he says, it is an exercise akin to medical treatment. When a disease seizes your body, you lose your original health. You consult a doctor. Doctor prescribes medicine to eradicate the disease. When the disease is removed, you regain your health. Health is your original state. So, no doctor can give you health. Similarly, no guru, no book can make you attain divinity. You just need to follow the prescription and remove the ignorance. And when the ignorance is removed, you regain and reclaim, not even regain. You can't regain, it's not lost. You have, due to ignorance, stopped claiming, and you're claiming yourself to be something else. Now, with knowledge, you will reclaim it. So you can only remove ill health. So too, the self is your original being. Ignorance is the disease. See, the root cause of all our suffering is ignorance of our true nature. When we are ignorant of our true nature, what happens is, I delude myself to believe that I am this limited individual. At the moment I conceive myself as this limited individual, There is this imaginary void, lack is there, lacuna is there, that I am incomplete. And to make me feel complete, my thoughts run towards the world. And when the thoughts run towards the world, those set of thoughts running towards the world is nothing but desires. And I try to fulfill one desire, then I produce more desires. Or the same desire gets intensified. So I'm constantly running outside in the world to feel complete. The Vedanta says, this way you're not going to succeed. You will only be constantly chasing and accumulating, contacting, temporarily enjoying, but you will never feel complete. When will you feel complete? Only when you understand all this tamasha is because of your ignorance of your true nature. And remove the ignorance through the knowledge. So he says the knowledge of Vedanta removes ignorance to restore your self to yourself. Is this Amiji's question? In disease, we know we have fever.
Yes, Guruji.
Yeah. In disease, we know we have fever. But here, what is it that we work on? Mental agitations, stress, disharmony with the world, relationships going wrong, not able to sleep. All these are the symptoms. Fever is one symptom you are talking about when you are comparing with the health. When the virus attacks you, because of the attachment to virus. I explained to you, in one context, I have said this before in the class. Do you know what is the expansion of the term virus in computer language? Anybody?
Yes, it erodes everything. Corrodes everything.
Yeah. Vital information resource under siege. V-I-R-U-S. Vital information resource under siege. All your intelligence goes for a toss the moment you become stressed. Generally, you know, for example, if there is fire at home or office, God forbid, if such a situation arises, what is the first thing you are supposed to do? Anybody?
Block yourself.
Huh?
Block.
Hello? All electrical appliances.
Run out.
Not switch off all electrical appliances. Who said that?
Sandhya.
It is not switching off electrical appliances, switching off the mains.
Mains, yeah.
Block.
Yeah, yeah. So the moment, first thing is you switch off the mains and then you call for the fire engine service. Or simultaneously one fellow goes switches off and another calls. You understand? So first thing is you switch off the mains. You know this. Now you know. But when there is fire and you are too stressed at the time, this knowledge is under siege. You know it, but yet you won't function in that. You won't function using that knowledge. Because the virus has attacked you. Similarly, we are suffering from the virus called attachment, which has come from the cause, ignorance. Symptom is agitation, disharmony, all these are the symptoms. Not being able to sleep without pills or some other thing. And, restlessness, relationships going wrong. These are all the symptoms. And all of us are going through all this. See, ups and downs in the life, why should they make you go up and down? World means there will be things favoring you, not favoring you. Nothing will go all the time according to you. Sometimes things will go according to you. Sometimes things will not go according to you. But why should that upset you? Why should the setup upset you? If the setup is upsetting you, see, same situation is not upsetting
you. Fear is biting them. Yeah.
Same situation. Ami may be upset. Shweta may not be upset. Now, situation being same, how come one person is agitated, another person is not agitated? So is the problem outside or inside? Problem is inside. But we keep blaming as if the problem is outside. You know, when you say this, the problem is inside. You say, sir, it's all very good for you. You know, maybe in your family everything is fine. You come and live in my house, then you will know. We will not be convinced. We will constantly say the problem is outside. Either it's my husband or my wife or boss or subordinate or neighborhood or politicians or system or something or the other. But the root is ignorance from which delusion comes and attachment comes. And therefore we suffer. So the symptom like fever, what is this? Excitement, you know, all that is there, no? Not able to take the ups and downs of life. Forget about ups and downs. Weather also upsets us. Body will go through, but why should I mentally suffer? Mental suffering should not be there. And that is, what is ill health? Ill health is mental agitations. Is that okay?
Yes, Guruji. Thank you.
Yeah. So continue with the next paragraph. Anu.
Vedanta only serves as a pointer indicating God. Terrestrial knowledge, however, subtle, cannot take you directly to the transcendental reality. It is not possible to capture God with words, feelings, or thoughts. God is infinite. Finite efforts cannot achieve the infinite. Nevertheless, one cannot reach God without this knowledge. Knowledge can take you only to the subtlest terrestrial experience. Thereafter, you will have to experience the reality subjectively.
See, this is a very important paragraph what he's saying. Vedanta doesn't give any definitions of God. God means something that cannot be defined. You understand? God is infinite. How can you define the infinite truth using your finite intellect, finite buddhi? So, therefore, you cannot define God. So, all these that Vedanta gives are called pointers. These pointers serve as arcs in mathematics. You know, they say, distance between A and B is 10 centimeters. So, you draw the line for 10 centimeters and then say A, B. And then they say, from A to C, the distance is 8 centimeters. So, what do you do with the compass? You measure 8 centimeters and then draw an arc from A. Then from B, they say the distance is 7 centimeters. Then you draw another arc, you draw another arc from B. The two meeting point is C and then you complete the triangle. So like that, various pointers of divinity are given. They are not definitions of divinity. Please understand this. Nityam, Satyam, so many things we have, you know, Amrita, all these are not definitions of God. These are all pointers of God. Remember this. And he explains, terrestrial knowledge, however subtle, cannot take you directly to transcendental reality. It is not possible to capture God with words, feelings and thoughts. You cannot put God in test tube and understand. So that way science can never be able to succeed in finding the truth. God is not something to be found out. God is something to be realized. The ignorance, when it is removed, what remains is divinity. So it's discovery. It's not an invention. So he says, it is not possible to capture God with words, nor with feelings. You know, some people do certain meditations and then they go through tremendous feelings from within and then say they've achieved it. They've become one with God. That is not God. That is something that is your mind projecting and making you think that you have experienced something. See, the moment you are experiencing it means what? There is an experiencer experiencing the experienced. Three things are there. So it's external. It's limited. So therefore, that is not divinity. So it cannot be captured in words or thoughts or feelings. He therefore says, God is infinite. How can finite efforts help you to achieve the infinite? Does it mean that the finite efforts are useless? No. So he says, nevertheless, one cannot reach God without this knowledge, without this finite effort. See, these finite efforts are all to bring about a conducive mind in which the knowledge metamorphoses into wisdom. We say through karma, bhakti, jnana, yoga, you have to achieve chitta shuddhi, chitta ekagrata towards the higher. And then in the seat of meditation, you will be able to focus your thought on the higher. Then in the 66th verse of chapter 18 of the Gita, he says, Sarva dharman parityajya, mamekam sharanam vraja, aham tva sarva papebhyah moksha ishyami masuchaha. You bring yourself to that point. The last point, how the last thought dissolves, that you leave it to me, he says. See, like you prepare the bed, you prepare the room, you prepare your body, everything to go to sleep. Isn't it? You take your meal few hours before you go to sleep. You take the kind of food also you understand should be conducive for you to go to sleep. You switch on the air conditioner before few hours, or at least half an hour, 1 hour. And then you set your bed, everything, you keep the room dark, all that you do. Then you go and lie down on the bed. You close your eyes with the thought of going to sleep. Exactly when you fall asleep, that is not in your hands. So you continue putting in all the finite efforts. Bring yourself to that point and not be attached to that feeling, that thought that I must sleep, I must sleep, I must sleep. Just relax. Then you will slip into sleep. Similarly, you use this knowledge. Take your thoughts to that height and leave it there. See, at the moment, without this knowledge, what are we constantly thinking about? Is Salman Khan ultimately going to get married or not? That is what we are concerned about. You understand? When I say that, these kind of things, in the worldly stuff, that's all we are interested in. So the mind, when it is not given a higher direction, it is only going to be concerned about the worldly things, which are frivolous things, many, very often. So therefore, with the knowledge, you've got to constantly keep your mind there. You leave it, it will slip there due to old conditioning. The old conditioning is there, no? See, if the class is not there, and supposing your other work is also not there, then what nowadays, what is happening is, everybody slips into, automatically the hand slips into taking the mobile phone and then watching the YouTube or browsing something in the phone. This has become the habit. So unless and until the mind is given a direction, it slips into the unproductive channels. Therefore, he says, you got to put your thoughts towards that higher. That's why he says, nevertheless, one cannot reach God without this knowledge. But just because you're studying, attending classes, doesn't mean you become one with God. Through this, you've got to keep your thoughts on the higher. So through the body, karma yoga, through the mind, bhakti yoga, through the intellect, jnana yoga. When you lead a lifestyle like this, and the food that you take in should be conducive for all this. When you lead a life like that, then you are constantly thinking of the higher. So your mind is now established in the higher. And such a mind only can be given into meditation. Otherwise, what you are doing is not meditation. You can call it meditation. So he says, knowledge can take you only to the subtlest terrestrial experience. It can take you to the subtle level at the world. You've got to jump from the world to the divinity. That transcendence is not in your hands. Therefore, he says, thereafter you will have to experience the reality subjectively. That will be done subjectively. It cannot be through any help from outside. And then in the shastras, they give an interesting analogy to explain this, that he is giving in the next paragraph. Continue.
The moon branch analogy aptly illustrates this truth. It is known in Sanskrit as Chandra Shakha Nyaya. The analogy explains how the moon can be pointed out with the help of a branch of a tree. Sometimes you see the crescent moon in the bright sunlit sky. It appears no more than an arc of a circle. In the wide expanse of the sky, you find it difficult to point it out to another person. He is unable to spot it in the glare of sunlight. Besides, there is nothing else in the sky with reference to which you may point it out. The analogy gives a practical way of doing it. You first point to a particular tree in the meadow, then to its trunk, a branch, and to the tip of the branch. Let him follow the line of vision up to the tip. Thereafter, ask him to gaze at the sky far beyond the tip of the branch. The moon suddenly appears to him. The unknown moon is now known.
What he's saying is, during the daytime, if you have spotted the moon and in your excitement, you try to tell the friends around you, look at this direction, you can see the moon during the bright sunlight. They are not able to see. So you understand that. They are blinded by the sun. So what do? You take their attention completely away from that to a tree. You see the trunk of the tree, they say yes. You see that branch, yes. And then that branch leading to the twigs, yes. And just look in between the twigs and they look at in that direction. They also see the moon. They say yes. So like that he says, Vedanta slowly comes down to your level, shoulder to shoulder, from the known facts, like you know your body, you know your mind, you know your intellect, you know the world. So it analyzes all these factors, takes you and leaves you at that place between the twigs, you know, to that height it takes you. Then the jump happens, the transcendence happens. That's all he says. So therefore, this is the practical way of doing it rather than going on just talking about the moon. Look at it this direction, look at it there, how beautiful the moon is, what all you are experiencing. There's no way the other person is going to understand. Therefore, he says, like the moon branch analogy, Chandra Shaka Nyaya. Like that, using all the reference points in the world, they take you. They say, see all these experiences that you are going through. What are they? They are all changing. So, if you are experiencing the change, the possibility is there is a changeless entity. With that reference only, you are realizing the change. Otherwise, how do you realize the change? Science tells you, not possible to realize the change without a changeless reference. You know, when you are going in the train, especially if you are going in some of the magnetic trains and all that, you don't even feel as if the train is moving. You know, so when you see the posts which are there in the station or the side of the track, you are moving, you understand. They are stationary, you are moving. Similarly, when you are going through this changing experiences. You remember verse number 18, chapter 4. We discussed this quite in line, two, three classes we discussed this. Chapter 4, verse 18. He says, you should be able to see karma in akarma, akarma in karma. Do you remember that? Anybody? Don't say it was pre-COVID, they are in post-COVID now. I have forgotten everything.
It is familiar, but we need the...
Yeah. So, when he said, you got to see karma in akarma. Akarma in karma. Now, first of all, this word akarma in the context is not actionless. It means atma, which is a non-doer. Atma doesn't do anything. But without atma, no action is possible. So he says, you must do atma in all the activities. You know, now I am talking. Now, organ of speech per se is insentient. This organ of speech cannot talk without the support of the pranas, without the support of the subtle body, without the support of the atma. Body and pranas themselves are insentient. Without the support of atma, they also are not going to be able to support the organ of speech. So that being the case, while I am talking, you must be able to see the atma. That is what is seeing akarma in karma. Then karma in akarma. Karma in akarma means what? When there is atma, you see the potential of the expressions through the other equipments enlivened by the atma. So there is potential. I gave the example of Middle East. You know, when you go to Middle East, you see all those buildings. All those buildings are manifestation of what? A manifestation of what? Petrol. If they didn't find petrol there, you won't see any of those buildings there. You know? So, when you see the buildings, you should understand the petrol. And when you find petrol, you can see all the buildings which can come out of the petrol. So when he's saying this, he's also trying to explain to us, when you see karma in akarma, akarma in karma, meaning you should be able to see the changeless in the changing. Karma is action, and which is constantly changing. And through that, you should be able to see the changeless. So that is how it helps you. Known to unknown means analyzes. See the body. The body goes through changes. It is existing in mother's womb. Then it is born. Then it grows. It goes through all these modifications, no? Birth, growth, disease, decay, death. So when you see these changes, from this you can refer a changeless entity. And also you are saying my body, my mind, my intellect. You are saying my body, my mind, my intellect. That means you are the possessor. Body, mind, intellect are the possessed. So you are not the body, mind, intellect. Then who is this? So you first try to separate that. This is how you move from known to the unknown. That's what he's saying. You know, see this branch. See that. This is the comparison he's giving. When you see the moon, sorry, when you see the branch has no connection to the atma. Sorry, the moon. Similarly, when you see the body, it has no connection to the atma directly. But from that, you separate. Then your mind becomes more and more detached with the body, mind and intellect. Then you are contemplating upon the higher, the pointers given by Vedanta. Then your mind becomes more and more pure and single pointed. That is how you proceed towards the unknown divinity, he says. So therefore he says, let him follow the line of vision up to the tip. Thereafter ask him to gaze at the sky far beyond the tip of the branch. That is meditation. The moon suddenly appears to him. When it will appear, we don't know. It is like that volumetric analysis, depending upon the concentration. For some people, the red litmus turns into blue in the chemistry lab in about 45-50 minutes. For some people, it takes 1.5 hours. For some people, it takes 2 hours, 20 minutes. The lab balance 40 minutes is what you have to do your, you got to use those data and then solve the thing. So they give you some time to do that. So the red litmus to turn into blue, that is not in your hands. All you can do is quieten the mind and come to meditation. And that Vedanta will help you. That's all it is. The moon suddenly appears to him. The unknown moon is now known. Continue.
You will appreciate that none of these aids has anything to do with the moon. The tree, trunk, branch or tip is not the moon. The moon is far beyond them all. Yet without these pointers, he could never have located the moon. These are essential aids to find it. But if he sticks to these aids and not go beyond them, he will never succeed in locating the moon.
Anu,
so it is with realization.
Read these sentences little slowly.
Okay. But if he sticks to these aids and not go beyond them, he will never succeed in locating the moon. So it is with realization of your supreme self. Vedanta provides all the knowledge necessary to reach your Godhead. Its philosophy is meticulous. It takes you from your present state to the point of perfection, short of self-realization. Vedanta, or for that matter, any knowledge, cannot take you beyond that point. You should not get involved in this knowledge and remain there. It is like fixing your attention on the branch and not going beyond it. Hence, be not content with mere knowledge. No doubt you need the knowledge, but make good use of it and go beyond it. Vedantic knowledge will purify your mind, make your mind contemplative, meditative. Plunge the purified mind into the silence of meditation. You will then discover yourself within. Therefore, to realize the unknown God, you will have to proceed from the known world. Study and analyze the world. Make full use of it to explore the realm of the unknown.
See, when you read this last paragraph, you understand that Vedanta is not going to take you away from leading your daily life. In fact, you got to find the truth, divinity, living in the world. Where will you go? Wherever you go, it is also part of the world only. No? Even if you take sannyas and go, where in the Himalayas you go, where is it? It is also part of the world. Where will you go? So therefore, Vedanta is not some subject which will take you away from life and living. It is in fact adds life to your life. If you understand Vedanta properly, you will be able to live your life properly. So he says, none of these pointers, the trunk, the twigs, none of them have any direct relationship with the moon. Yet they help you. Similarly, all this knowledge, they help you. So you cannot say, I don't need knowledge. Anyway, how is this knowledge that I take in this finite world going to help me to realize the infinite truth? Though that statement per se is correct, it cannot help you to realize the self directly, but it will help you indirectly. How? To remove your conditionings. To remove your remaining in ignorance. And that's the problem. You understand? So therefore he says, you use the knowledge. Don't get lost in the knowledge. This is a problem. People are lost either in action or in bhakti or in knowledge. They don't do anything beyond that. As if karma itself will give them realization. Some people say, why do you have to study Bhagavad Gita now? I don't have to study. I am a person who follows dharma. I have not done anything against dharma. I've been meticulously following. And they may be correct also. I am a dharmic person. I don't live anything adharmic. I don't have to study Gita now. This is their logic. Which means what? They are stuck with dharma. That's it. Some people say, listen, I have been going to temples, pilgrimages, and this will help me. And some people say, no, listen, every day I study, reflect, not a single class I miss. And I also do my individual reflection and all that. That knowledge alone is enough. I'll keep doing this. See, per se, they are not going to help you. But without it also you cannot reach them. With it also you cannot reach. Elsewhere he gives this example of a pole vaulter. Here he is not given, but generally he gives. See, a pole vaulter has to cross that height, that bar height. He has to cross that. That is the game. That is the sport. So what does he do? He brings a pole running in, develops the momentum, pets the pole on the ground at a particular point, and then lifts himself to that height. Up to that point, the pole is useful. Thereafter, what he does? He drops the pole and crosses the bar. Now, with the pole, he cannot cross the bar. Because if the pole touches the bar, it's a foul. You have to drop the pole exactly at that point and then cross over. Without the pole, he could have not lifted him to that height. With the pole, he cannot cross. Without the pole, he cannot cross. Same way, the knowledge, karma, bhakti, pilgrimage, all these things have a role to play. The rituals, everything has a role to play. They are meant for chitta shuddhi, chitta ekagrata. That is all. So, the divinity is not to be seen outside. Divinity is to be realized within. So when you go to any mandir, you go and stand in the queue in Tirupati Balaji for so long, and then as it is, when you, after so much of difficulty, when you get there, hardly 1 minute they will make you stand, not even 1 minute, 2 seconds. You keep on saying, Jargandi, Jargandi, and then they push you. And you get closer and closer. As you get closer and closer, if you are a real bhakta, you close your eyes. You have closed your eyes and then you have not bothered about, you know, what decoration they have done for God, what kind of clothes, what kind of ornaments. You are not bothered about all that. You are completely in devotion where you have closed your eyes. Because you are not just a tourist, you are a devotee, right? You close your eyes, then you are a true devotee. You don't say, "Arey yaar, so many hours I have been waiting in the queue, so let me admire the God from head to toe," and then open your eyes. So this is the symbolic thing that it is within you. But now you are not able to realize that because the mind has got so much of conditionings, so much of mala, dirt, you know, these desires, selfishness, greed, fear, jealousy, arrogance, all these malas are there. Those things have to be removed. That these things do. The spiritual practices. Karma, bhakti, jnana. Here is mainly talking about knowledge. But everything. All this will make you qualify for meditation. One needs to qualify for meditation. In the sense, you can't go and sit on the seat of meditation and then directly start thinking of divinity and then get connected. Not possible. Because when you sit on the seat of meditation, slowly you will find your mind has gone somewhere. You are just chanting home, home, home maybe, but your mind has gone. Patani, where all it is gone? So, suddenly you realize, arey, it's gone somewhere. Half an hour has gone. So you bring it back. So, before you get into this abhyas, abhyas means meditation ka practice. You know. Before you do that, you first purify and get there. Then you'll be able to keep your mind on that single thought for a longer time. Then you come back, do the sadhana, get back, do the sadhana. When you keep on repeating this, there comes a time when you will be able to keep your mind in that single pointed attention for a long period, long period, long period. Suddenly there comes a time when there is no period, nothing, because the individual is dissolved. What remains is divinity. That is what he says. This is how the moon, just like how the moon branch analogy helps you to spot the moon. All these practices help you. They are like pole. Use them. Don't get stuck with them. This is the problem. We are all stuck with something or the other. We'll get stuck with the knowledge. We'll get stuck with the rituals. We'll get stuck with the chanting. We'll get stuck with guru also. See, guru, of course, helps you to get to the truth. But getting stuck to the guru, how will you get to the truth? A true guru will not even appreciate that. You understand? Somebody is wanting some following, then he or she may do that. But if he or she is a true guru, they are not going to allow themselves to be stuck to you, nor you to them. They'll say, start becoming more and more independent. That is the best Guru Dakshina you can give. All other Guru Dakshina is useless. Real Guru Dakshina, Guru really wants us to become independent. All of us realize the self and become independent. So he says, it purifies the mind, helps you to go into the silence of meditation. So when you are in meditation, you are given a mantra, right? You say, oh, whatever mantra it may be. But the mantra, it can be actually technically speaking any mantra. Instead of Om, I can even say buffalo. Buffalo, buffalo, buffalo. But the problem is, with buffalo, your thought goes to so many other things. Whereas with Om, there is a thought association. You understand? That matters. So therefore, when you do that mantra chanting, your intellect is discriminating between the sound and the silence. Sound, silence. Sound, silence. Slowly, slowly the sound becomes mental whispers. So, the discrimination is between mental whispers, silence. Mental whisper, silence. Then, your intellect gets stuck with silence. Because mentally also there is no whispering. And for the intellect, there has to be two minimum to discriminate. There is no two. The intellect gets dissolved in the silence. And what remains is silence. That silence is the dynamic reality truth, where the knower is merged with the known, and what remains is only the truth. So he says you will discover the self within through this process. Therefore, to realize the unknown God, you will have to proceed from the known world. You cannot say, I don't care about this world. I'll go and sit in meditation and then I'll keep thinking about all these unknown things. Then I'll realize the self. You've got to be in the world, get there. That's why they said you have to be in Grastha Ashram also. Now, everybody cannot directly go to sannyas. Like Adi Shankara, a few people can go up to sannyas directly because they have done all that in the previous Janma itself. You know, in the previous Janma they have done it. Now they are able to directly go. Now, how can you go there directly? Not possible. So therefore, he says, unknown God, you cannot go directly. You got to proceed through the known world. Study, analyze, world. World means what? The experiences you gain through the body, the experiences you gain through the mind, the experiences you gain through the intellect, all your experiences you got to analyze. So when you read this book, after that, when you get back home, you sit and think that all I studied, you compare and contrast, then slowly, slowly, your mind will drop the conditionings. That is how you have to work yourself. So just study and analyze the world. Make full use of it to explore the realm of the unknown. You got to move from the known to the unknown. Next topic, composition of the world.
Composition of the world. The world comprises four principal kingdoms: mineral, vegetable, animal, and human. The mineral kingdom consists of inert, insentient matter. Matter has no life in it. The mineral world is crude, opaque. It has no awareness, no conscious power, no capacity to express itself like the other three species. But if life is defined as energy or motion, then matter also can claim to have traces of life in it. It does manifest a kind of motion, undergoes physical and chemical changes, but its motion is insignificant. Its changes and undulations are almost imperceptible, hence considered practically lifeless.
See, understand that Vedanta is a science that explores world and the individual and the relationship between the two and the underlying factor of the world and the individual, and says the underlying factor is same. It establishes the oneness. And thus, it takes you to the divinity. So first, he is analyzing the world. When you analyze the world is made up of what? Mineral kingdom, vegetable kingdom, animal kingdom, human kingdom. And when you analyze the mineral kingdom has no life. Understand? They are lifeless. So that's what he's saying. Then comes all the other three species which has life. Through this, what he's going to do is, he's going to compare the human being, and then he's going to say some people are like mineral, tamasic fellows, some people are like vegetable, some people are like animals, highly rajasic. Some very rarely you find a person who is human. And very, very rarely you find a person who's reached the divinity with it. This is a beautiful analysis that Swami Ramtirtha does actually. I don't know how many of you have got the complete works of Swami Ramtirtha. The 7 volumes, the lectures given by Swami Ramtirtha has been published as 7 volumes. It's called The Inwood of God Realization. Beautiful lectures. You know, and all those lectures, he never wrote the book. Only gave lectures. Somebody, you know, had noted down everything and they have published the books. It's a fascinating book. From that, Swamiji has taken and is given that here. Composition of the world. Mineral kingdom, lifeless. Continue. Vegetable kingdom.
The vegetable world exhibits a little awareness, consciousness, some sort of expression, activity. Plants grow. Their branches reach different directions. Their roots dig deep into the soil. but they cannot move from place to place. Their motion is confined to one spot. Their manifestation of energy, motion, is restricted, limited.
Yeah, continue.
Animals are more conscious of the world than plants and minerals. They belong to a higher cadre of evolution. Their motion is not confined to a spot as with plants. Their expressions are far and wide. They are known to travel great distances with the necessity when the necessity arises.
So, in the case of mineral kingdom, there is no life, there is no emotion, there is no thinking for sure. When you come to vegetable kingdom, there is life, there is body, but there is no emotion, we can say. But if you go deeply, science says that plants also have emotions, but they are very rudimentary. So for all practical purposes, we say plants then don't have emotions. Definitely no thinking. The consciousness is more limited. See, the consciousness is manifesting through this world. When the consciousness is manifesting through this world, it manifests as existence, knowledge, and bliss. It just manifests as existing in the mineral kingdom. Whereas when it comes to the vegetable kingdom, animal kingdom, and human kingdom, it manifests as consciousness, knowledge. Mineral kingdom has no knowledge. Why? Because they don't have the subtle body. The only gross body is there. Then when you come to the vegetable kingdom, little bit consciousness is expressed, little bit awareness is there. Beyond that, no emotions, no thinking. You come to the animal kingdom, it's a little more defined. Animals have more awareness, more consciousness, more emotions. But definitely, they do not have the independent thinking. You know, the animal is hungry and it cannot say that there is very limited food. So therefore, I will not eat, let the food go to another dog. No dog will say like that. Whereas a human being can do that. So that independent thinking, the thinking is not there in the animal, though the animals do express limited thinking. Like they can discriminate between the, you know, a stranger and the owner, like that, but they cannot really get into deeper discrimination like the human being. So their consciousness is also, awareness is also limited. Then comes the human being. Continues.
Humans are the most evolved among living beings. Their consciousness or awareness of the world is supreme. They exhibit far greater energy and motion than the routine mechanical movements of animals. Endowed with paramount powers, they control all other beings, even harness time, space, and causation. No animal can conceive, much less achieve, these feats. Above all, a human alone can surmise the existence of God.
So, above all this, a human being alone is able to conceive God. No animal can conceive God, because animals do not have subtle intellect. Only human beings have subtle intellect. What is the difference between gross intellect and subtle intellect? Gross intellect is the intellect with which you discriminate within the realm of the world. Subtle intellect is with which you discriminate between world and beyond. The terrestrial and the transcendental. So human being questions, I find this world as nothing but cause-effect relationship. But if this world is cause-effect relationship, who is beyond this cause-effect? This question a human being alone asks. No animals ask. Now you see in circus and all, they have trained the elephant to do puja. Now the elephants are doing puja to Bhagwan's photos. Doesn't mean that they have conceived God. They are trained to do a certain thing, they just do it. But they are not really conceiving of divinity. Whereas a human being can conceive divinity. Some people accept it, they believe in divinity. Some people reject it after conceiving. Their first question, is there a possibility? They reject it. So the conception is there in everybody, even in an atheist. Atheist also conceives, but then he rejects it. So therefore he says, human being alone surmise the existence of God. the potential, and then ultimately it is a human being alone who can realize the self. Continue, please.
The German philosopher Leibniz says that life has three manifestations. Life sleeps in plants, dreams in animals, and wakes in man.
So, because man has more consciousness, man has more awareness, has more discriminating capacity, has the ability to control and direct the mind, far superior being. Being a far superior being, we need to function at that level. But very often we function at the level of the mineral or vegetable or animal. Very rarely we function as a human being. So therefore, he says, understand this is how the world is composed. Now with this understanding, when you look at the human being, you will see that there is a mineral man, vegetable man, animal man, human man. And then very rarely a person gets to the Godhead. All this we will see next week. Let's conclude the class.
Guruji, I have a question.
Yes, please.
So in these four segments, so human beings are the only ones who are capable of creating karma? Are the others not capable of creating any karma?
100% correct. Because human beings are the only one who does it with the doership. No animals, nothing does it with doership. No animal is capable of murdering, capable of killing.
So then in a sense, I mean, today any other plant, animal, I mean, vegetable, mineral, animal, they follow their nature. They don't go against their inherent nature. They follow and live in sync with nature. I think human beings are the only ones who go for their greed. So then how is that evolved in a sense? I mean, we are the only species which actually...
No, evolved in the sense the potential is there, but through knowledge you have to act like animals but consciously. This is the idea, no? Jai Krishnamurti ji says, animals are unconsciously perfect, human beings are consciously imperfect. So through the knowledge, see every equipment comes with a manual, right? The manual for our life is this Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads and all these great philosophical texts. So using them, we got to direct our life and not live like animals and with doership and create karma. But unfortunately, we are all doing that. But once we gain the knowledge, we get rid of the doership, we get rid of the karma also. That's the idea. So the animals have no karma, correct? You are 100% right.
So, can we say that we are egoist in thinking that we are far superior than the animal or the vegetable?
Superior in the sense, you have the potential. Because of that, some people may feel egoistic. That's a different thing. But for example, like amongst us in this class, right? Rita ji is a great painter. Amongst us. Right? She says, amongst us, she's the best painter. Supposing she says that. She could be saying it as a matter of fact, or she may be saying it out with ego. If she says it out of as a matter of fact, what is the problem? So as a potential, we are definitely superior. Animals don't have this potential. Animals cannot be unattached. We can be unattached. Have you ever seen any dog? Very rarely you will find. Otherwise, if there are two dogs growing up together, and when they are hungry, there is only little bit meal. There is no question of sharing there. Whereas a human being can do that. The potential is there. Whether a human being does it or not does it, that's a separate thing. From that angle, human being is far superior. But many human beings are living like animals or even worse than animals. At least animals are better off. That is a separate thing. Potential, we are superior beings. We have to see, have you ever seen any animal inventing aircrafts, spaceship? You won't see all these things. Or has animal conquered nature by like you start on a Wednesday and reach on a Tuesday in some place. You gain 1.5 hours, 2 hours, 3 hours. Animals can't do this. So they don't have those capabilities. Human being has far superior capabilities. But human beings are leading a worse life than animals. This is a pretty thing. But in terms of potential, human beings are definitely far superior.
But then that the very fact that today as human beings, we have the potential. In fact, animals don't have the potential. So they are living to their own way of life. But we have the potential, and with the potential, we misuse the potential, and actually are the ones who are actually abusing the potential. Isn't that kind of,
Because they are ignorant. They are the cause of the destruction of this universe. We are the ones who are destroying all this nonsense that is happening in the world. You cannot blame the animals for it. Have you ever
seen? Because they don't do anything which is, in fact, the animal kingdom or the plant kingdom doesn't do anything which is destroying the planet in a sense.
They just lead a life beaten path. They don't have a choice of action. So that is correct. That is true. But that doesn't mean human beings have less potential than animals.
No, we have more potential.
We have the intellect, we have the subtle intellect, which animals don't have.
We don't know that. We don't know what animals have. But I have a question, Guruji, digressing from this.
Huh.
I'm in Mumbai with my grandkid. Hmm. He's 6 years old, and yesterday I was putting him to bed, and I was telling him stories on Krishnaji. And he says, Daddy, I don't think there is any God. For me, it is energy. That is helping us all survive. I said, that's true. In older times, they used to believe in sun and, you know, water and earth. And they used to pray to them because... So how do you define God to a little kid?
And don't define. You don't put your thoughts in them. Let him continue. You tell him, you grow with your thoughts, but don't stop questioning. Don't come to any conclusions. I appreciate your thoughts. I'm not going to tell there is God or no God. Why should I put my thought in my grandson or granddaughter? Let them continue, but let them continue the spirit of questioning. All we are supposed to do is allow them with freedom to question and move ahead. Tomorrow he himself may come to the conclusion, there is God, there is no God. Let him move. You don't have to force him.
So going back to this thing, I feel human beings right now are so destructive and so awful that you need to tell the next generation that there is something that, you know, needs to be controlled.
No.
And there is somebody watching over you about your deeds.
No, it's not necessary. There are so many, you know very well that the police fellows are watching you, and you still go ahead and do all unlawful things, all of us. Right? So it is not necessary that out of fear, see, in management, you can control through fear, you can control through carrot, you can do all that. But ultimately, it's through knowledge. So you don't have to put your children into or grandchildren into some conditioning to bring them up to that level. All you need to do is encourage them to question, think, question, think. The thinking will direct them. Thinking will guide them. The questioning will guide them. That is more important rather than putting your ideas of God or no God or whatever it may be in them, so that they behave properly. You don't have to worry about it. Just make them independent thinkers. Let them question. Let them think. Allow them to think. Allow them to question. If they ask you something and you don't know, there's nothing wrong. You say, I don't know, beta. If you know, if you come to know of that first, let me know. I'll also try to find the answer, and then we'll discuss. This is the way to proceed. Their thinking should guide them. And if they think, continue. He's only 6 years old, you said. Right? They'll proceed. They'll continue. Why we want to put your thoughts on them? I will you, I'll not put my thoughts on them.
Okay. Thank you, Guru.
Welcome. So the potential is there, but that doesn't mean we are living up to that potential. No animal has the potential to go. Have you ever seen any animal murdering? There's no murder in an animal. They just kill. That's it. Out of hunger. And then that's it. There's no murdering, there's no raping, all this nonsense is not there in the animal kingdom. It's all there only in human being. And it is a human being who can also go to the highest level of sacrifice, which animals can do. You understand? So, a human being can go down lower than animal or rise above and go to the Godhead. Such a great range is there in human being. So, all the shastras are trying to say is, try to get to that highest range rather than falling down. If without direction, you will fall down. With the direction, you get there. That's the idea. Is that okay?
So basically, like in human beings, we have the potential, and we have the potential to know ourselves beyond the human body, which animals...
The capabilities also. I have a capability, I don't use it. Mm. What can God do?
Mm.
That in buddhi, you don't question what we can do. You don't question, you will remain worse than animal maybe.
Mm.
What is happening? In the name of education, when we are only giving intelligence and people are not independently thinking, then what will happen? This kind of condition only will happen. And greed will develop. Automatically, we'll destroy this planet. Yeah, already destroying it. And then we are trying to see if we can go and destroy Mars also. Is that okay?
Yes, okay. Thank you, Guruji.
Guruji, just scheduling. So, are people okay to attend on the 29th? If not, shall we go into January?
29th, I won't be available, Bhavi.
So, Guruji, I think...
I'm traveling.
No, it's not 29th. Today is 21st, so 28th.
28th, is it?
I think so. Today is 21st, right?
Sorry, 28th. But
yeah.
If people are traveling end of the month, should we look at January then? So January, the first Thursday, happens to be 4th of Jan.
Okay.
So is everyone okay with that? In fact, what we can do is that just that 1/4 of Jan, we can have a physical class.
Mamtaji, I'm actually in Chennai.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I will be coming back only end of Jan.
Oh, okay. So it will happen online. We just wanted to do one physical class just for a connect, you know, for everyone. So we can do that in February when you're back, Guruji.
Yeah.
And so now we don't have on the 28th. Then is there anyone interested in 20? I mean, not interested. Can anyone be available for the 28th? Or we just go into 4th of Jan?
I'm okay for 28th, but I think there are not enough of us. So 4th of Jan is good.
I'm also okay on 28th, but I'm okay with 4th also.
So 4th will do, but 28th, and we've got Pooja, we've got Shweta. Anyone else?
I can.
Sandhya.
I can come.
And four, five people are there, Guruji. 28th, can we do then 28th?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, so let's do 28th, whoever is there.
Okay, thank you.
28th will do.
I also may be there.
Oh, great. Then full house. Then January, then 4th. These two will schedule and then we'll take it as it comes.
Next week we'll meet again.
28th we'll meet, and then February we just wanted to do one physical class before the end of February. So maybe we can do that middle of Feb or whenever it works.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Guruji.
Thank you, Guruji.
Hari Om. Thank you, Guruji.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyairva Buddhyatmanava Prakrite Swabhavat Karomi Adhyat Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Hari Om.
Hari Om, Guru.